This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the abbot of the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or to find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
This talk is on courage, part two. The bhikkhuni Upalavana stood at the foot of a solid tree. Mara, the evil one, desiring to arouse fear, trepidation, and terror in her, desiring to make her fall away from her concentration, approached her and addressed her in this way. Having gone to a solid tree with flowering top, you stand at its foot all alone, bhikkhuni. There is none whose beauty can rival your own. Foolish girl, have you no fear of rogues? Then it occurred to Upalavana, who is this? This is Mara, the evil one, desiring to make me fall away from concentration. And so she replied to him, though 100,000 rogues just like you might come here, I stir not a hair. I feel no terror. Even alone, Mara, I don't fear you. I can make myself disappear, or I can enter inside your belly. I can stand between your eyebrows. Yet you won't catch a glimpse of me. I'm the master of my own mind. The bases of power are well developed. I am freed from every kind of bondage. Therefore, I don't fear you, friend. Mara, realizing the bhikkhuni Upalavana knows me, was sad and disappointed, and right there disappeared. So the other day I spoke a little bit about courage, and so I want to continue. And so I spoke a little bit about courage. It's root in the heart. It's root meaning in the heart, to have heart, to have inner strength, to be connected. It's interesting that when we're afraid, how the heart flutters, and in courage, the heart needs to be strengthened, and that our losing our heart, losing that inner strength, is our discouragement. And all the ways in which we turn away in discouragement, having lost heart, and then what we turn towards, because we're always turning towards something. So if we turn away from our inner strength, we usually are turning towards doubt or hesitation. If we're turning away from pain that is difficult to bear, then very often we turn towards anger. And I read some from Shantideva, and where he speaks about anger, and really we could be talking about any phenomena, but he spoke about how anger doesn't arise on its own. It arises as a result of causes and conditions. And so he uses the example of if somebody is striking you with a stick, it's the stick that's hurting you. It's your body that's being hurt. We get angry at the person. And so he basically says, where, if we look at it clearly, where should we direct our anger? Where should we direct our attention? Or if someone speaks to us in a way that's hurtful, the words is what we experience as hurtful. Our ears that hear these words. So who is the offending agent here? We bow in deep respect to Prajnaparamita, the mother of all Buddhas, wisdom beyond wisdom. She illuminates all our delusions and dispels all of our fears. In the Prajnaparamita Sutras, the Buddha speaks about facing truth and the need to have fear, to have courage. We will have fear, to have courage. And, I remember when I first read that, I thought, in the sort of the spirit of how the teachings are aspirational and often speaking sort of to our highest accomplishment. Full realization, fully manifested compassion. that struck me. You know, that here the Buddha was saying, if in encountering what is true, we don't turn and move away, then we may very well be ready to engage the Dharma. And so I spoke about the principle or the value of the Beyond Fear of Differences group has brought forth, and the element of courage, which we described as the ability to step forward, to be vulnerable, to tolerate discomfort, and to hold space for new ideas. And so the other day I spoke about stepping forward and being vulnerable, so I want to talk about the other two aspects of this. And so tolerating discomfort is, it's big. It's like there's no practice without this. There's no, in a sense, learning without this. There's no stepping into anything new. There's no freedom. There's no shift without this. And I wonder sometimes if, while this has always been true and human nature always wants to turn away from discomfort, if we are, in a certain way, much less well-equipped to tolerate discomfort than any other generation in the history of the world. Because we have, through our technology and advancements, created the possibility for some to avoid so many discomforts that were just an ordinary part of everyday life, both small and large. And in that, we will necessarily, in the same way that when we don't practice memorization, we lose that muscle, when we don't practice developing tolerance and the ability to be uncomfortable, we kind of lose that resilience. You know, the capacity is always there, but it has to be developed. Tolerate means to allow without interference, which is kind of perfect. It's a profound acceptance. In other words, to tolerate discomfort is to allow ourselves to experience that without trying to interfere with it, without trying to manage it or control it, which is really the nature of dukkha, is always trying to change the reality of this moment because it's not the reality we want. You know, in the same way that when we come here, we want to engage practice, we want to free ourselves of attachments, we want to, you know, go into the dragon's cave, but not the way it actually happens. Right, we have a much better version of that scripted in our mind, right? But it doesn't work out that way. And so we have to, from the very beginning, just being in this physical body, being in this posture, sitting on the floor, turning in, we experience discomfort. And so to tolerate without interference, to forbear, to learn how to hold, not so much endure, although there are moments of endurance, right? When there's little else available to us, right? You use what you got, what you got. So sometimes when nothing else seems to be available, sometimes we are just enduring a moment. The last few minutes of a period of zazen, for instance, right? When you're trying to employ, you know, the practice as you understand it or as you're trying to discover it, and we can say, well, it shouldn't have to be like that. We shouldn't have to endure it. Why? Why is that a bad thing? It could be a bad thing if that's all there was. But in those moments, when it's the only thing we can draw upon, we draw upon that. And in that, something happens. There's a possibility for something. And so whether we're tolerating pain or impermanence, or dissatisfaction, or fear, or sadness, or whether we're tolerating joy, relaxation, a feeling of peace, stillness, silence. We can have experienced discomfort within anything. And we generally experience discomfort within things that are unfamiliar. We experience discomfort in samsara, but we have become comfortable within that. Not because it's comfortable, but just because we've learned how to sort of experience that in a way that we no longer experience it so much as discomfort. But all of this is in the realm of aversion. To not tolerate discomfort is in the realm of aversion. So within the two basic ways of denying reality, one is to grasp at it and try and preserve it, and the other is to deny it and push it away. To not tolerate discomfort is all within the realm of aversion. So to develop patience. And so in that sense, every disturbance, every form of discomfort, and it's a good word because it's so broad, right? So it includes everything small and slight and, you know, ordinary, so many of which we don't even notice because we've gotten used to them. And then, of course, everything on a much larger scale. So every time we experience that, that's dukkha, right? That's a subtle form or not so subtle form of suffering. And so that is a pivot point. That means it's a pivot point. That means it's a threshold, a threshold in which to either strengthen and recreate again the karma that has brought that forward, or to break that cycle, to shift. And our responses in those moments is all kinds of things, right? Frustration, irritation, anger, pain, blame, excuse, frustration. Shantideva says, when you face such a moment, if there is something you can do, what's the use of frustration? If in such a moment there's nothing that you can do, then what is the use of frustration? In both cases, all of those responses, those reactions that we have, he's saying are something that we add on and is not serving us, is not helping. And so what he's saying is that the frustration, the anxiety, the fear is not in the situation. It's not in the person that we might be encountering. It's not in the action or the outcome of the action. And yet, our mind will seek out that frustration or that worry and turn and turn and turn in it. And so it's almost like, is that discomfort more reassuring to us in some way than being at ease? Does it keep us busy? Well, it definitely does that. It keeps us occupied. Does it allow us to give us a way to avoid actually turning towards ourselves? Does it give us a sense? Sometimes I think it gives us a sense that we're doing something just because we're preoccupied. We're sort of obsessed about something, so we must be getting something done. And so instead, practice is to stop. Stop, cease, and enter into mind. And to have faith that there is in that very moment a purposeless, measureless, vast moment, that it will not be managed. Shantideva says, happiness is obtained with great difficulty, whereas suffering comes very easily. Only through suffering is there release from the cycle of existence, therefore mind be strong. And only through suffering is there release from the cycle of existence is not enshrining suffering as something noble. It's just stating the facts. It's just saying dukkha arises from all conditioned existence. So everywhere we turn, there is dukkha. So it's only through our lives that there is release from the cycle of existence of grasping, disappointment, and pain. It's the fire in the lotus. And so that courage, you know, sometimes it appears like our dragon at the front gate or at the front door, fierce. And that dragon, you know, she's within all of the four elements, if you look at her. She's got wings, she's in waves, she's breathing fire, and she rides the cloud. So she's at home within all of the four elements. And so in that way, she is our example. But sometimes courage is very, very, very quiet, very simple. And so to practice means to encounter and become familiar. As Dogen says, don't cherish what's close at hand and hate what's far away. Right? Hold it lightly. Don't give it extra unnecessary weight. Don't hold it too lightly. Just let your eyes and ears be alive. And so to become familiar, he says, become all utterly familiar with every perception, with all things. And so to become familiar within the body, within emotions, within relationships, within our world, with our discomfort, right? The dis-ease that we experience deep within ourselves, that which appears outside of ourselves, because it is that which is what we're either turning away from or trying to destroy, extinguish. And so when we face those obstacles, what we call obstacles within, when we face the challenges of our lives, we will experience that discomfort. And so the Buddha said we will need to bring forth courage, heart. And so whether we're facing our own karmic patterns, our own insecurities, our regrets, our loneliness, our ordinary physical pain, our aging, the list is long. Or whether we're facing a demagogue or demagogues, they seem to be proliferating, climate change, racism, sexism, oppression, patriarchy, whether we're facing bosses, uncooperative family members, we will experience discomfort. And the only way that we develop our capacity to do that is by doing that, right? And so we practice. You know, that's why it's so essential that we do sesshin, we come and we sit on these diamond seats and let all of those concerns fall away so that we can go into the belly of the matter and develop our capacity, our stability, our patience, our trust, our faith, our skillfulness within our own discomfort, within our own worlds, so that when we venture forth, we are developing and have developed some skills, some stability, some patience, some faith with which to meet the day. To not do that, to not step forth, to not face those moments of discomfort puts us in a very precarious situation, right? Samsara, by its nature, is precarious. It's a very unstable state, which has to continually be recreated, right? Because it's not the original state. It's not the natural state of things. It's a produced state. So samsara is inherently unstable, which is why in samsara, the samsaric world, there is so much instability. Robin DiAngelo, in her book on white fragility, which is an excellent, excellent book, talked about that sense of a false sense of equilibrium or equanimity or stability in terms of being white within a racist culture. And she says that that sense of white equilibrium is a cocoon of racial comfort, of centrality, superiority, entitlement, racial apathy, and obliviousness, all rooted in an identity, a self-identity, of being a good person who's not racist. So when that's challenged, when that identity is challenged, she says that throws us off of our balance, right? We feel unbalanced, right? Because I'm a good person. And so when I'm encountering within myself, or it's pointed out to me that I have some racist tendencies or socialization conditioning, that throws me off balance because it doesn't match my identity. But wait, I'm a good person. And so she says, because being racially off balance is so rare for most white folks, we haven't had to build up the capacity to sustain that discomfort. Thus, when we find ourselves in the face of those challenges, we find them unbearable and we want them to stop. Right? And that's what so much of that really brilliant book is about, is all of the strategies that white folks use. And when I read it, it was just like I was on every page. Boom, 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 boom. But what's interesting, what is also interesting, is we can take that passage, and just relate it to ordinary delusion. So within ordinary delusion, which is a kind of stability, a kind of equilibrium, it's precarious, right? And so it has to be maintained. That's why we're so tired all the time, right? It's a full-time job, right? We have to be at it all the time, right? Thus, and so ordinary delusion, our attachments, our fixed views, our patterns of mind, is a kind of cocoon of passing comforts. One pleasure, one pleasure, one pleasure, one pleasure. Of self-centeredness, putting ourselves at the center, of aggrandizement, building ourselves up, of entitlement, what I deserve, because this is the center of the universe. Lack of compassion, because this is the center of the universe. And blindness, delusion, all rooted in an identity that I'm a good person. That's how I see myself. That's how I want to see myself. And, you know, that's kind of a good thing. It's a good thing that I want to see myself as a good person. But the identity of that, the attachment to that, actually obstructs me from being exactly what I aspire to be. And so she says, and so challenges to that, encountering Mara, encountering the self, encountering the Sangha, encountering the Dharma, throws off our balance, throws off our sense of who we are. And because that is so rare, encountering that within awareness, we encounter it all the time, but to actually encounter it and know that we're encountering it, to be up close. That's so rare, we have not had to build up the capacity to sustain that discomfort. And so we find those challenges unbearable and we want them to stop. Deny, avoid, suppress, distract, entertain, fantasize. We could also look at that in relationship to our earth equilibrium. Our sense of the of us inhabiting this planet, there's a kind of equilibrium, right? A kind of, this is the way it is. This is the way it's always been. This is the way it's always going to be. That very sense, she says, is a cocoon of comfort, of predictability. Tomorrow's going to be like yesterday. The next generation, 100 years, 200 years from now, because there, that equilibrium creates a false sense of stability, of permanence. And so of comfort, of predictability, of human superiority, what we want matters more than anything else, of human entitlement, we will die by convenience, of earth apathy, right? I've said before, what if the earth went on strike? Like, all of its systems, just to take a rest, for goodness sake, for, I don't know, let's be generous, 10 minutes, we're dead. We're gone, right? And yet we can go our whole lives and be apathetic towards our great mother. And so climate change is challenging this, throws off our sense of everything. Hey, wait a minute, this isn't supposed to be happening. And because we have not built up the capacity, no one has, this is brand new. To sustain that level of discomfort, we find it unbearable and we want it to stop. And so that looking at, I think it's important to take that basic principle the difficulty of tolerating discomfort, the necessity to tolerate discomfort, and apply it. Just shift it. Look at it through a different lens and realize it's the same. And what that's telling us is that when we see patterns, we should come closer, we should examine, because those patterns are karmic, they're not accidental. They have weight, they have strength. They're where we go. They're where we live. They're how we perpetuate. They are that cocoon. And what's interesting is, you know, if you look at the sort of universality of human experience that the Dharma points to, so whether it's 2019 or whether it's 2,500 years ago or whether it's 13th century Japan or 8th century China, everything the Dharma speaks about what we're going to experience stays the same. I mean, isn't that kind of amazing? Right? That consistency of human nature. And that we can relate so deeply to what the Buddha realized so long ago in such a different time and place and culture. And I think the same way of those aspects that D'Angelo describes as white fragility, or that we see happening in our world in relationship to the earth, and the consistency, the strength, in a sense, the reliability of our responses, of those conditioned responses. And in a way, there's something comforting, it's not quite the right word, but it helps us to realize it's not just me, which is really important, right? It's why these kinds of study are so important. You know, when I found myself on every page of that book, you know, I realized, oh, this is not just me, right? She's seeing this because that's her work. That's her life's work. She speaks to white folks all the time. And this is what she sees over and 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 over. I mean, isn't that extraordinary that we have like this shared consciousness, shared response, not just consciousness, but response. And that can help to give us courage, I think, so that because we realize it's not just something's wrong with me, right? The me that I think there might be something wrong with is not just me, right? It's a world. It's a society. It's a history. It's a time and place that is where I am standing. It's all of that. And so in that, all of those responses to discomfort, you know, just to stop. I mean, think about what Zazen is. You know, that's why we sit in stillness. And so that when in this posture of the Buddha, this posture of great power, of great strength, of great courage, I mean, just think about it. You're sitting up. You're facing forward. Right, chest exposed, vulnerable. Right, your heart open to the world. Your head upright, right, prepared, and at ease. And within that, then we experience, moment by moment, that which is difficult, that which creates discomfort, and we meet it with that courage, which is just mindfulness. It's holding ourselves in that moment. It's not ornamenting, adorning. It's not creating a story. It's to see it as it is, to experience it as it is. And yet, within that path, we do get discouraged. There are moments where we feel that it's hard to stay present, and so we don't. It's hard to stay put, and so we leave. It's hard to keep our heart open, and so it closes. But that's just normal. That's just normal, right? I mean, that's what we encounter on every page of reading the Dharma. Oh, there I am, there I am, there I am, there I am. So that when that happens, we shouldn't be surprised. It's not just you. In a sense, that should hearten us, give us heart. Courage, because it's human nature. It's conditioned nature. And when Any person or group of people are conditioned in a similar way. They will be each their own person, creating their own karma, and they will also have shared experiences. That's what a sangha is. But in that discouragement, we can feel defeated, we can feel upset or angry or hurt. And so Shantideva comes and speaks softly. Happiness is obtained with effort. Suffering is easy. This is easy. Right? This doesn't take a lot of talent, this that's happening right now. Right? Just show up and don't do anything different. Don't do anything special. Just do what you've always done. There it is. Shifting that, liberating ourselves, requires effort. Therefore, mind be strong. And so I think of this principle of courage as aligned with actualizing harmony and not being angry. Because the response so often within discomfort, meeting discomfort, is anger. And so we can think of anger as the kind of messenger, that there's something that we don't want. And so to stop, to listen, to step forward, to be vulnerable, to see. Shantideva says, if on account of my own doing, I don't practice courage in this moment, then I am creating an obstacle on the very ground where the potential for something different has been presented to me. I'm in that pivot place, but I'm pivoting back into what's familiar. And so I mentioned the other day these four mental attitudes or attitudes of mind that Buddhism teaches. The first is conviction or faith, and I sort of paired that with stepping forward, having faith in our capacity to step forward. The next is inclination or intention. And so to be vulnerable, that has to be grounded in a clear intention. And the third is perseverance. And so within our experience of discomfort, to tolerate discomfort, to practice discomfort, we have to persevere. We have to continue. We have to step forward again. We have to be determined. And within that, to find our stability, which we find within our concentration, within our mindfulness, which is why Mara is trying to pull Upalavana away from her concentration, because he knows that will make her unstable. It will put her back into that place of precariousness, but she's not buying it. And so to persevere, very, very important. I mean, seshin is a practice, right, of perseverance. I mean, how many times during a seshin do you meet a moment? I mean, some moments are big, just saying, I can't do this thing. I can't do this, right? And then there are much simpler, smaller moments of just tiredness or boredom or... And then you begin again. You just begin again. The power of that. And we can only discover that and give that strength by practicing it. You know, we can't do this theoretically. We have to actually be experiencing these moments in a live way and in a way that matters, that counts. Practicing together is part of what makes it count. Right? Because when we practice together, we're relying on each other. And so one way that can work is just ego. It's like, I would jump up and run out, but I would be embarrassed. Right? And so I stay put. One for the ego. Right? In that moment, it helps you. But in a larger way, it's just like, I am part of this, right? And what I do matters. What I do has an effect. That matters to me. I want to have a good effect on you. Therefore, mind be strong. Shantideva says that perseverance, which is part of effort, paramita, he says, is a mind that delights in virtue, which is really wonderful, you know, because we can think of effort as this, you know, it's like Sisyphus pushing that damn rock up the hill again. You know, you got to do it, but it's just drudgery. And the Virya Paramita is joyful effort. It's enthusiasm. It's infused with spirit and enthusiasm for the way, for the Dharma, for liberation, for life. A mind that delights in virtue, that delights in all that is good. Its obstacles are laziness, basically, he says. Just being lazy. The laziness of indolence, the laziness of being attracted to non-virtuous actions, things that aren't going to help us but give us temporary relief, and the laziness of discouragement, losing heart. He says, why do we not realize that while we're caught in the snare of our delusions, such as laziness, that we are trapping ourselves in the snare of samsara and held within the jaws of the Lord of Death? Time is swiftly passing by, right? And in that moment, we can respond as though we've got all the time in the world, right? That we will always be healthy, we'll always be able to practice, we'll always have all the conditions we need to be able to do it. You know, it's like when we imagine ourselves dying, right? So I imagine myself in my deathbed, you know, and I'm dying. It's not so bad, you know, because I'm feeling pretty good, right? So I'm imagining myself like this, dying. That's not dying, right? And so what he's saying is, in that moment, remember. And we're all lazy. I'm lazy. We all have laziness. Moments of indulgence, moments of just accepting what we should not accept, of strengthening what needs to be weakened, of avoiding what needs to be faced. I mean, we all do that. Indolence is the definition, the root definition means to be indifferent or insensitive to pain. What is that? This is not to be free from pain. It's like going to sleep within pain. It's like being numb to pain. Accommodating pain so that we don't need to do what we must in order to be free of it. And so he says we're attracted to worldly pleasures and particularly to the pleasures of sleep. So ordinary, right? So I would have, you know, sorry, but I would have realized myself, but man, I am so sleepy. You know, I'll get back to you. The laziness of discouragement, of indulging our loss of heart, being lazy, you know, not applying the effort that is necessary to pay attention, right? To be mindful, to feel, to leap. It's the opposite of that laziness, the opposite of mindfulness, the opposite of courage, the opposite of effort. Patience and joy. That's why effort is so important, because the habit of just, you know, living out of our, you know, self-creation and world creation mind is so strong, it's so old, right? That if we don't do anything, that just continues. Right? In the same way that if we don't do anything, climate change is just going to continue, and it is. Right? And so great effort must be brought forward to precipitate change that is liberating. And so we can see why, we can appreciate why laziness then becomes like dangerous. And that doesn't mean that, you know, it means don't be lazy when you're resting. When you're practicing, when you're working, when you're loving, when you're eating, what does that mean? Don't be lazy. It means don't be numb. Know where you are. That moment is the only moment that you'll ever get like that. The voice of that laziness is, Shanti Deva says, I wish for higher attainments without having to make any effort. I wish for permanent freedom without having patiently to endure any pain. I wish to remain like a lifelong god while living in the jaws of death. How foolish I am. When death comes, I'll be overwhelmed by suffering. Why do I forsake the joy of the sublime Dharma? You know, this is why teachers say that in the beginning, samsara seems so easy, so nice, so pleasurable. But as we live longer, it gets harder and harder and harder and harder. Practice in the beginning seems so hard. Why should it be so hard? Right? That question is asked, why should it be so hard? What exactly is the it? But with that, with all of those virtues and practices, it gets easier and easier and easier. And the enjoyment, the actual pleasure, the fulfillment, the happiness that comes out of practicing the Dharma is so much larger, so much deeper, so much more real. And so then the fourth value is to hold space for new ideas, beginner's mind. Because the mind is vast, the mind is measureless. Beginner's mind is to practice and live within that mind, to not hold to fixed, rigid views, opinions, beliefs. The Buddha said this is one of the worst kinds of fetters. And so the fourth mental attitude is mental pliancy. It's really the same. That the mind is pliant, it's flexible, it bends. And so then we're back again to stepping forward. Stogan said, unless you bend, you can't free yourself of the cycles of samsara. To let go, to let go, to let go, to let go. To hold space for new ideas, to continually be encountering the world anew, to be encountering things we have not encountered before, to be encountering discomforts we have not encountered before. That's why a person could be realized, deeply realized, but be blind to, for instance, racism, to sexism. Be blind to it. They understand the nature of reality. They understand the nature of the self, of all the mental formations. They've even realized the unity of form and emptiness, prajnaparamita, but they haven't examined that. They haven't manifested that in this realm or in this realm. And that realm presents new worlds, new ideas. The principles that the practitioner brings to it are the same. That's why it's so helpful, I think, to see these teachings in all of these different ways, in all of these different worlds. But if we don't bring ourselves to those worlds, and so bringing our attention, bringing our Dharma practice to the earth and our continuing existence on it, means we have to bring all that the Dharma is, which is perfectly capable of understanding how to be in and respond to this time. But we have to do that. Right? The Dharma doesn't tell us how to do that. We have to integrate that within ourselves. And so, naturally, it can seem overwhelming. Naturally. If you've never experienced feeling overwhelmed, then you're probably not paying attention. Of course, it's overwhelming. When we stand back, when we think about it, when we figure out how we're going to fix the problem, when we're watching the clock. But that's not where a bodhisattva lives. A bodhisattva lives in. That's why we come closer. That's why we let go of the separation. Mother Teresa said once, they say my work is just a drop in the ocean. I say the ocean is made up only of drops. Effort is a mind that delights in virtue. Courage is one of those virtues. And so Shantideva says, I should not discourage myself by thinking, how shall I ever become enlightened? Because the Buddhas who speak the truth have said that it can be so. I should not allow myself to be discouraged. I should not allow anything to steal my heart of the conviction of my ability to become enlightened, to realize myself. For those who have become enlightened have said that I can do this. And they do not lie. This is the truth, not a lie. And that within that courage, there is joy. within that stepping forward, within the tolerating of discomfort, there is surprisingly joy.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about our ongoing programs and residency opportunities, visit zmm.org.